Hey there. If you like true crime stories and you love being in the great outdoors, you have come to the right place. Welcome to Crime Off the Grid. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Crime Off the Grid. I'm Tara.
And I'm Nancy.
Thanks, everyone, for listening today. Hey, Nancy, tell everyone where we're taking them today.
We are going to Crater Lake National Park in Oregon.
Yes. Well, we've discussed one case from Crater Lake already a few months ago, but what a beautiful place. Crater Lake lies inside a caldera, which is a volcanic basin, and was created when the 12,000 foot high Mount Mazama collapsed 7,700 years ago following a large eruption. And because the lake's filled almost entirely by snowfall, it's one of the clearest lakes in the world. Crater Lake National Park is comprised of 183,224 acres of mountains, peaks, evergreen forests, and the lake. Established in 1902, Crater Lake is the fifth oldest national park in the United States and the only national park in Oregon. The lake is 1,949 feet. 594 meters for all of you folks across the pond, deep at its deepest point, which makes it the deepest lake in the United States and the second deepest in North America. There are two campgrounds in Crater Lake, and today's story actually takes place in one of them. It's the Mazama Campground. And Mazama is the largest and most centrally located campground in the park, and it's nestled in an old-growth forest at 6,000 feet in elevation. On July 27, 2005, at around 9:40 p.m., park rangers in Crater Lake were dispatched to the Mazama Campground Loop D to report a possible domestic disturbance. And when they got there at 10:08 p.m., they made contact with a suspect that they later identified as a male named Ron M. Ward the second. Do you have a second, or would he not just be Junior?
Oh yeah, he'd be Junior, wouldn't he? But
I've never heard of the second. Okay.
Anyway, never have either.
In campsite D19 in Loop D, which D Delta is near the amphitheater where interpretive rangers have lots of campground programs, and they draw several people in the evening to listen to their talk. And then it's near the Annie Creek Canyon Trail, and that has several sites that overlook the canyon. D-Loop had this evening 30 out of its 35 sites occupied.
A witness named Tom was camped with his wife and four children in a campsite beside the man. He described the man as big, strapping, tattooed, shirtless, and a little bit odd, and not a family type. Tom said, "We were in the amphitheater. The interpretive ranger was trying to conduct his program, and he could hear this yelling, a woman screaming, and a few profanities. Mm. At the urging of another person attending the campfire program, the interpretive ranger listened to the commotion, and then he called for law enforcement rangers to respond. Tom said it sounded as though things had calmed down for a while until he walked past the trailer where the man was camped. He said he could hear him launching F words. He could hear this banging, and then he heard this grrr." I'm not sure what that was, but right. Tom thought, of all campsites, why do we have to be next to this guy?
And that right there is one reason why we rarely camp in campgrounds, because of the noise and just, you know, patrolling campgrounds every night for how many years as right. part of your job, like that right there. We don't, but I mean, that's the best way to go and see parks. So sometimes you're stuck.
But you are real close to people. I'm sure they just try and fit as many people in as they possibly can.
Right. Well, the rangers identified themselves when they got there verbally as park rangers. Hey, park ranger. And they were in full uniform, right? Patrol rigs mm-hmm. as they entered the campsite. And now the rangers see Ward walking away from them and toward the front of the camp trailer that he was occupying with his girlfriend. So you've got the report of potential violence and screaming, and the suspects not acknowledging the rangers. And that to me is really very disconcerting. He knows you're there. He knows why the Rangers are there, and he creepily walks away and ignores them.
Oh, red flag. Absolutely.
No kidding. Yeah, that puts my spidey sense way up. And by the way, responding to a call of domestic violence is one of the most dangerous calls for law enforcement. You're 100% on defense when you're going to one of these calls, while the other players or the suspects are essentially on offense. You're entering into someone's private domain, and people's emotions are already elevated due to whatever dispute they're involved in. And now you, the law enforcement officer, brings this coercive power of the state, and people are angry, and they're angry to see you. And they probably aren't the ones to even call the police. And they know that there's a potential to be arrested. The danger is greatest when the batterer suspect is unemployed, intoxicated, lives with the actual domestic violence victim, and has already caused injury to the victim, and has weapons and displays a hostile demeanor when officers arrive, which is almost all of this in this case. Mm-hmm. And not to completely talk tactics here for cops, but a responding officer is not going to or shouldn't respond by his or herself. And you hear this all the time when cops are on duty, especially in rural agencies or in the park service, responding by themselves. But boy, if you can wait for that second officer, it's a wise thing to do, because you're not going to just walk up to the front door. You're going to find cover and concealment when you announce yourself, if you can. And now I'm just setting this scene, because imagine a park ranger responded to a call in a busy campground, which happens a lot, and your only cover, maybe your vehicle or a skinny tree, you have to worry about all of the campers in front of you and behind you and walking around, and you have to consider their safety and how your actions may affect their safety as well. And in this case, it's dark, and that's a lot for a ranger to think about and be planning for as they respond. These calls escalate very quickly, and the rangers in Crater Lake were walking into a hornet's nest.
And I don't know, like 99.9% of the domestics that I responded to in a campground were at night. I mean, They're always in the dark.
Exactly.
So after Ward started walking away, he soon started to scream violently at the rangers. The rangers both moved to points of cover and asked Ward to come out into the open to talk where they could see him. One ranger moved to a position towards the front of the camper trailer, hoping that he could make a visual contact with Ward. It's not good if he's wandering around and you can't see his hands or his movements.
Right.
So now the ranger was able to see him with his flashlight. He told Ward, "Let me see your hands," and asked, "Do you have any weapons?" It was reported by witnesses and the rangers that Ward started screaming at the rangers, "Do you want to die?" And then one ranger replied, "Do you want to be arrested?" Because that's kind of the direction that things were going for the rangers anyway. So then Ward said, "What are you going to do? You're only effing park rangers." And then the rangers told Ward that they were law enforcement rangers, which, you know, a lot of people still to this day don't know that park rangers are law enforcement.
Well, that one of the reasons why I think of the National Park Service is everybody wears the same uniform, gray shirts, green pants. And for years in the Park Service, people wore the same badge, like law enforcement wore the same badge as interp rangers, or the same badge as somebody saying, "Welcome to Yellowstone, welcome to Crater Lake." So how confusing that is. I actually think it puts those other employees at risk because people don't know the difference. But you're right. They don't even think, and once they see a park ranger, they don't even think they have any authority. And if I had blue lights come up on me, a clearly marked vehicle, I don't care what color the stripe is, a person with a badge and a gun and a radio and clearly talking to dispatch, maybe getting on the PA, maybe I'd follow some commands and argue their authority with my attorney in court, but it happens all the time.
It does. It happens. Or you're doing a vehicle stop and somebody pulls up and says, "Hey, can you tell me where something is?" And you're just like, "What?
Would you do that to a highway patrol officer who's clearly on a vehicle stop? Would you go up and hand him your big map and go, 'Hey, can you tell me where
I know
that big tree is that you can drive through?'"
That's crazy.
Yeah. You know, one time when I was working in the Canyon District of Yellowstone, and there was an incident in the campground, and it really was a minor violation, but it turned out this guy was not following any commands. He was kind of weird, like this guy was, and it turned into a scuffle, and he got tased, and then he pulled out the probes from a taser, and he had to get tased again, and that kind of thing. And so anyway, I was one of the folks that ended up taking him to jail. His whole defense the next day when he saw the magistrate was, I didn't know that they were police. I just thought they were some randos come into. And this one was kind of a funny incident in a way, where all of a sudden there were these people in the campground, in his campsite. Like, I don't know how many were camping in there, but it was like deliverance. Another thing where you like, how are there not banjos playing? Or it was like zombies. Picture like zombies just kind of coming out, closing in on you. Mm-hmm. Rainbow people. Right. I don't know. All kinds of stereotypes. It could have been deliverance, rainbow people, or zombies. I don't know. But it was like, let's scoop him, go get him out of this situation. But I think he beat everybody back out of jail by the time the ink was dry on the paperwork. I didn't know who they were.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And that happens a lot. Then Ward screamed at the Rangers, "I've had it. I'm going to bash your head in." And he moved towards the two Rangers at a fast pace. The Rangers got back to their patrol vehicle for cover and ordered Ward to stop several times. Now, Ward appeared at the rear of the camp trailer, about 30-ish feet from one Ranger.
That's close.
That is very close. Who was trying to move to a position of cover at the rear of his patrol vehicle. The Ranger said that Ward had some large object in his hands raised above his head and was moving towards them at a rapid rate. The Ranger told him to drop it. So now Ward has closed the distance. He's about 20 feet from the Ranger, and the Ranger saw the object and recognized it as a wooden club, which is a deadly weapon.
Yeah.
He said, "Drop the club." And now he has drawn and aimed his duty weapon at Ward.
This guy still blows off the Rangers in their commands, and he continues to advance on them. And one of the Rangers says, "I'm going to spray him," meaning the OC pepper spray, which is a non-lethal weapon carried on Rangers' belts or other law enforcement officers' belts. Ward is unaffected by the OC, which is very typical. And, when people have their adrenaline going, it doesn't necessarily affect them. That is a hard weapon to deploy with success, especially with a moving target. In my experience using OC, and this is more than once, I am more likely to be incapacitated if I try to use it on someone else. I just got to where I'm like, that is not even a tool. I have to carry it, but it's not a tool I'm going to ever consider. So I don't think at this time, these Rangers, I don't think they had tasers during the mid-2000s, but that wouldn't be appropriate or the weapon of choice to use on someone advancing on you with a deadly weapon. And neither was the OC spray. But Ward moved past the Ranger that sprayed him and continued to rush on the other Ranger. So now the Ranger's yelling, "Drop it." And Ward is 6 feet away, clearly not following commands again and closing the distance so fast. So the Ranger fires two rounds from his .40 caliber, hitting Ward once in the chest and once in the head, stopping him instantly. And this is one of those split second decisions. This Ranger did exactly the right thing. He shot him to stop the threat. They immediately called an ambulance and started administering advanced life support medical care to Ward. A park ranger / paramedic gets there, and Ward's pronounced dead on the scene at 10:55 p.m. And this whole scene of arriving on scene and this, threat and everything lasts, I think I read, around just 2 minutes. So that's how quickly things were escalated and things changed. And to add to the chaos of the scene, the girlfriend immediately runs out to the suspect who's been shot and lying on the ground. She's screaming and crying that the Ranger shot her boyfriend, saying, "You've killed him." And she was hugging him. And, that's not untypical of a victim of DV to respond like that. So that's another thing the Rangers had to do as far as wearing multiple hats on that scene. They had to stop the threat of the lethal force on them, immediately became the medic and began life-saving measures, and now be the victim advocate or like a family liaison person to that female DV victim.
So many hats that you have to wear. And what a chaotic scene.
Yeah.
I mean, just that's crazy. So the club that Ward used to attack the Rangers was a war club made of lacquered wood by a local Native American. And Ward bought it from Chiloquin Curios. The war club was 26 inches long and 1 3/4 inches at the handle and 5 inches at the head. And it weighed 2.5 pounds.
Hmm.
Following the incident, investigators interviewed Ward's girlfriend and witnesses in the nearby campsites. The witnesses said they saw and heard Ward before the Rangers got to his campsite. He was drinking alcohol and very loud and verbally abusive. The campground was filled with families and kids. Like you mentioned earlier, there was only 5 sites that were available in that loop.
Right.
How scary and unnerving.
Exactly.
The girlfriend stated that Ward became violent with her and used a war club to bust up the inside of her camper. So this guy, he broke the table, he broke the counters, and many other things in the camper. He also broke the metal fittings that secured the table to the floor. I mean, he's just winging this thing around.
Yeah.
He held the war club up high and terrorized her, threatening to hit her with it in his rage.
Yeah.
So Ward's girlfriend also said that he had been very frustrated over the past few days regarding a child custody situation and not being able to find work. And before the Rangers got there, he told her that they were over. And that he had planned on sleeping in the woods that night and killing himself in the morning. Now, Tara, we talked about this before. You know, threatening suicide is also a manipulation tactic of an abuser.
Yes, it is.
And there's a fine line between suicide and homicide.
Yep.
They often go hand in hand in domestic violence cases. During subsequent interviews, she said that she didn't believe he was planning to commit suicide by cop. But maybe, just maybe, he took it as an opportunity once the Rangers got there.
Well, they did have an autopsy performed. And this is standard in a shooting death. I mean, they needed to determine that the Ranger's weapon was, in fact, what killed him. And where was the bullet placement and any other factors like blood alcohol content, drugs on board, etc. And they noted several tattoos, including the word vampire on the back of his right shoulder, and the word Ronzilla, like using his first name Ron, on his upper chest. Okay, but Nancy, I think it would be fun if you and I went and got matching tattoos, and you could put Nanzilla on yours, and I'll get, you know, Tarzilla.
There you go.
Or something like that. Lovely. And
yes.
He also had a tattoo of a skull on his left upper chest. And as I'm reading this, I'm trying to figure out, okay, where all the placement, and he probably didn't have much skin left. He had a cross with webbing on his right shoulder down his bicep and an Egyptian ankh. I don't know how you say this. A-N-K-H. And so I looked that up, and it's an ancient Egyptian symbol, which symbolizes the many aspects of life, including physical life, eternal life, immortality, death, and reincarnation. I guess all the things you want in a vampire.
Exactly. And
the symbol is a teardrop-shaped hoop with a cross connected directly below it to represent the sun making its path upward and over the horizon. Okay, this is very creepy. They found fang-capped eye teeth and all of his finger and toenails cut to sharp points like claws.
What?
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
You know, that's so attractive. Ward, no wonder she didn't want to leave him. Ward's girlfriend confirmed that he did practice vampirism by feeding on his own blood. Okay.
Nice.
I had a cut or scratch and I put my mouth on it. Does that mean I'm a vampire? I mean,
no, but you didn't have a shooter when you did that.
No, a little shot. Oh. I don't know. That's just so weird to me. I guess I'm glad he didn't seek out blood from other people. I didn't.
Well, yeah, that's
I saw nothing
that we're aware of, anyway.
That we were aware of, or at least that she said. What does she know necessarily? But, and okay, also for a self-proclaimed vampire, he had two different images of a cross tattooed on him. Now, I am going to have to check my vampire knowledge, but isn't a cross supposed to help ward off vampires? Like,
correct.
That's what it does in the movies.
Yep, it does in the movies, and I'm with you. I think that that's
so. What do you call that? That's a little counterintuitive or something. If you're going to be a vampire, but apparently Ward would frequent internet websites containing vampire fantasy stuff. It communicated with other people who claimed to be vampires and their lifestyle. And the report I saw said that these websites also included sites with juvenile females, and I take that to mean child vampire porn. I guarantee you that's a thing. I guarantee it is. Yeah.
I bet you're right.
Yeah.
It's not websites that I'm on, so I've seen that.
Listen, don't look it up on your phone. That's one I am not going to look up on my phone. I think, I don't know what's going to come up from that, but I guarantee it's a thing. Nobody here looked that up.
So the autopsy confirmed two gunshot wounds to Ward. The first was to the chest, below the sternum, and that severed the aorta. The second was to the right eye, and the medical examiner concluded that the death was caused by gunshot wounds. The toxicology report showed his blood alcohol content was 0.27. That's three times the legal limit. Ward's mother stated to the investigators that Ron always wanted to go out with a bang.
I can't imagine a mother saying that.
I can't either. This story reminds me of the episode we did a few weeks ago. We titled The Joker's Demise.
Oh, yeah.
Similar in that there was a Ranger-involved shooting. The suspect was killed after pointing a shotgun at the Rangers, and he was dressed and painted up like the Joker. If you guys haven't listened to that one, go find it and listen to it.
It's actually one of my favorite ones that we did.
I know. These are situations that you would never think would happen in a national park, but they do.
Yeah, absolutely. Crazy stuff you can't make up.
No, you can't.
I really couldn't find any information about the female victim in this case, but I did see an article where the chief ranger at the time said that the girlfriend was badly bruised after the attack, which I would imagine she would have been. You know, she was struck with that club.
Oh, yeah.
Accidentally or on purpose, I don't know. But it turns out that Ward had a history of violence, surprise, surprise, against ex-wives, plural, and girlfriends. And it wasn't clear, though, whose kids, you know, the custody issue that he was so upset about. It wasn't clear whose kids those were. Maybe an ex-wife, but I'm not sure. I don't believe this victim on this scene was the mother. I hope in all the chaos of the scene that someone was able to get her the resources she needed to have help, regardless of her reaction on scene. In her, because again, this was not a typical behavior of someone that is in a domestic violence relationship. And I think this woman clearly needed some help to process this. And I also looked at this as the Rangers had dealt with such tense, uncertain, and rapidly evolving situation. But they are also technically legal victims of a crime. And I know cops do not like that victim word about themselves. And that's not what really is meant by it. But legally, they had a violent attempted assault on them. And they're entitled to all rights and services as any victim of crime. And I know that we're doing better in officer-involved shootings. As an agency, the Park Service has got new policy. Most law enforcement agencies have policies on how to deal with officer-involved shootings. And, you know, an officer who was involved, it really is a trauma to them as well, whether or not they were injured. But this is kind of fun facts. The International Association of Chiefs of Police says that officers need to be afforded sleep before they're interviewed, because you can say the immediate what happened and they can tell you, but you don't have those memories, it's the neurobiology of trauma, how that works. And you don't have all those memories in order. Like, you just can't chronologically get your story with all the details. So they do one sleep and then they do two sleeps, and the more sleep cycles an officer has, the more accurate information they can recall. And so we try to afford that to our officers. And I don't know in this case how long it took before they were actually interviewed about the case. But it's also something that we need to afford victims of crime who have suffered a trauma. You know, we get in there as law enforcement, we want to say, write down everything that happened, which is the wrong way to interview a victim, because mm-hmm. they are entitled to sleep cycles as well before they get that in-depth interviewing. Or, you know, a lot of times their story changes because that's what it does. Different memories come up, and then we cops will say, ha ha, they're lying because they changed their story. And that's not understanding the neurobiology of trauma. I went down a tangent there.
No, that is so true, because I mean, as you said, this whole incident took less than 2 minutes.
Yeah.
That, you know, that they were on scene. And so, yeah, had they not done the actions that they did, you know, who knows what the outcome would have been.
Right.
So the National Park Service statement by the chief ranger of Crater Lake stated, in recognition of their actions during the shooting, the rangers have been presented with exemplary act awards. 14 other Crater Lake employees were presented with a unit citation awards for their actions in responding to and managing the incident. The two rangers acted quickly, decisively, and appropriately to prevent death or serious injury during a rapidly evolving situation. They demonstrated superb courage, judgment, and tactics in successfully resolving a violent and dynamic situation without injury to innocent persons.
Right. You know, again, it's amazing that no one else was hurt in this crowded campground. And this case reminds me of the actions of the suspects in that Yellowstone campground. You know, the ranger tells you and I did mm-hmm. together, and it was titled Taser, Taser, Taser. But
right.
Where it was really so scary, worrying about the other people's safety because you couldn't see past them. You didn't know if there were children behind them in the next campground or the next campsite. And we really thought someone was going to be shot that night. And fortunately, it ended much differently than this case.
Correct. It's awesome that nobody else was injured, not even the victim. And I don't know if she was in the camper or where she was when those shots were fired. But I looked at a picture of that camper. That's a small camper.
Yeah, teeny weeny. Yeah.
Yeah, that they were in. So that again, is just amazing that nobody else got hurt except
yeah.
the threat was stopped.
Right.
So kudos to them.
Yeah. I would say if anybody listening to this, and if you find yourself in a campground anywhere, you know, state park, national forest, and you hear something like this going on, please report that to law enforcement. Don't ever try to walk next door and tell somebody quiet down, because I don't know that that would ever work. Rarely would that work.
Right.
It would escalate a situation. You might end up being a victim yourself, but do what you can to keep yourself safe and call law enforcement.
Especially in this day and age where people take actions into their own hands and you never know what's going to
right.
happen.
Right. They have access to weapons, and I don't want to be dealing with that.
You know, Tara, when we were reading this information, I read that in 2003, they did a survey on how many assaults were on rangers. And in 2003, there was 106. And then another one was done in 2019. And this is just before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And there was 228 assaults on rangers.
Wow.
So, yeah, I know. In 16 years, it's more than doubled.
Wow.
The assaults.
Yeah,
on park
I believe it. For yeah, we said before, park rangers are, of all the federal officers, are the most assaulted than any other federal law enforcement officer.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I think part of that might be because, like we just said a little earlier, a lot of people don't recognize the authority of a law enforcement park ranger, even though they're in a park, a campground, or whatever. They just, you know, they're full on uniform, whatever. And I think that's a lot of attitude. So, Nancy, we've kind of gotten into a habit of changing our brains, you know, after these hard cases to listen to. And we've
right.
also kind of gotten into the habit of these bad reviews on national parks. I don't know why. They're so fun to read. But here's one from Crater Lake. And
okay.
quote, there's an amazingly deep and creepy lake there. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Hence the name.
Right. Hence the name, Crater Lake. Someone also said, There are mosquitoes everywhere, and I can get a larger portion of food from Olive Garden for the same price.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not.
Yeah. Someone says, just something to look at and then leave.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Definitely not the outdoorsy type on that one.
No. Bugs, and they will bite on your face. Where do these people live that they don't have mosquitoes? I mean, I know I did read, you know, there's a lot of mosquitoes in Fair Lake.
Mosquitoes, biting flies. I mean, bees. Come on now.
Right. You know, they're all part of the circle of life.
That's right.
Every time I get mad at having so many mosquito bites on me, and I'm like, okay, there's a purpose. Mosquitoes serve a purpose. I'm not sure what they are, but they serve a purpose. And then I smack them.
That's right. And then you have the blood-stained arm.
Oh, but you know what? If I was a vampire, I would welcome mosquitoes. Maybe that's why they went camping there. Because that way he didn't have to, he could get a mosquito to bite him, draw some blood, and then there's his dinner.
There's his dinner.
All right. Well, that's all for this story. Don't forget, check us out on Facebook and Instagram. Follow us, please, and share. And we appreciate all the support that everyone's been giving us. Well, stay safe in wild places, everyone, and watch out for the company you keep.
And if you see something, say something.
That's right.